You and I sitting down for a Thursday, August 24th, 2023 edition of Connecticut Today. We chatted about the first GOP primary debate of the 2024 election cycle. Former Time magazine reporter Alan Sanders also shared his thoughts on that debate. And of course, only in Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi stopped by for his weekly update. Hey, Vivek, shut up! Oh, my God. Is that guy still talking? Shut up. Oh, this guy Ramaswamy last night, it's like a root canal. Shut up. Oh, I feel better now. Come on. Don't get mad at me. You were thinking the same thing I was last night. Who is this guy? With the teeth and the waving of the arms and everything, stop it. Saying dumb things about just about everything there. And this is a guy that's been associated with a George Soros group before, leading to my theory that he's a plant. What do I mean by a plant? Well, not anybody who can actually win the thing. But it's that old phrase, sand in the gears, right? It's an old military thing where if you wanted to screw up something the enemy had, and it was a mechanical kind of device, you didn't really need to hit it with anything worthy of a high caliber weapon. You dumped a bucket of sand in it, and it's called, you know, that old thing, grinding the gears. And I'm listening last night, and he is just saying dumb things. Now, the guy is worth, what, $600 million or something like that? He's a biotech entrepreneur. God bless him if he's made a lot of money. But my God, I'm watching, you know, CNN and MSNBC today, and all they can't show this guy's clips. Enough. He's got no shot. He can't win. Now, I'm sure, I don't think Doug Burgum can win. I don't think Mike Pence can win. You know, there's a top tier and a bottom tier there. But come on. And the idea is when you are a plant, when you are in there just for the glory, or if you're auditioning for a cable news spot, whatever, just have it be all about you and say things that you think sound good that are really dumb. But man, last night, and it was interesting, somebody posted this, and I do have it, I do have this page marked. I'm going to get to this in a little while. Things leading up to this that Vivek Ramaswamy has said. Now, again, I have no personal animus to the guy. I'd probably love to sit down and chat with him about politics, about his entrepreneurship, his business, but come on. So anyway, somebody has put together a montage, and I promise I'll get to this a little bit later on, about the things that he has said. And you know who he brings up a whole lot in his interviews when he is talked about? He brings up Ron DeSantis. He's always out there criticizing Ron DeSantis. And I'm just going to play this montage a little later. Look, I'm looking up on MSNBC right now, and they're juxtaposing Ron DeSantis and Vivek Ramaswamy. Oh, my God, folks. It is so patently evident what's going on here. And look, am I a conspiracy guy? No, but come on. The guy can't win. Nobody is going to elect Vivek Ramaswamy as president. But again, we allow people to be part of the process. I get it. I understand that. But again, the object there was to take the air out of the room, take the air away from Chris Christie, take the political air away from Ron DeSantis, take it away from Tim Scott, take it away from Nikki Haley. And by the way, good for Governor Haley or former Ambassador Haley. I don't know what she prefers, Most people who get to the level of being an ambassador at the UN prefer ambassador, so I'll call her that. Ambassador Haley last night, I don't blame her. She kind of said, "What are you talking about?" I mean, honestly, what are you talking about? She said at one point with, you know, I mean, these people, and I'm sorry, I know this is a big thing with the far right of the Republican Party right now. Well, we need to walk away from Ukraine. Or this, yeah, walk away from Ukraine, and then what happens? Here comes Poland, and we got World War II all over again with World War III. Now, it's sad because I thought Ron DeSantis was good last night. I thought Nikki Haley was good. I thought Tim Scott was good. And I got to tell you, though, some of the fools in the Republican Party, and I mean fools with a capital fool, okay, yelling and howling when Chris Christie is saying, giving his piece, his opinion of Donald Trump, but instead of acting like adults and either sitting quietly or applauding, there are still a lot of people in my party who like to act like knuckle-dragging Neanderthals. And you know who's laughing with all this? Joe Biden, who, by the way, if you put Joe Biden on that stage last night, he couldn't last 10 minutes. He wouldn't know which way is up. He wouldn't know where he is. So it is, and look, I don't mind a rowdy debate. I'm not sitting here at a quarter past two on this Thursday, August the 24th. I'm not sitting here saying the debate should be like, you know, the Oxford Debating Society. No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that people have to sit there and say, well, I believe the Honorable Gentlelady from South Carolina apparently doesn't have a full grasp of the situation, ma'am. Let me explain. No, I'm not saying that. But I wonder, I'm starting to wonder just how effective these things are. Oh, look at that. MSNBC, the graphic that Ramaswamy takes center stage at the Republican debate. What a shock. And oh, they just went to some video here. Now, of course, I can't hear the audio because I'm talking to you fine folks. And they're talking to young college kids who were impressed with Vivek Ramaswamy. And again, I have no personal animus toward the guy, but my God, what a shock. Instead of concentrating on the substance that was talked about, whether you agree with it or not, on the substance that was actually talked about by Chris Christie, love him or hate him, by Nikki Haley, love her or hate her, Tim Scott, Ron DeSantis, we're talking about a guy who has no shot. I would love to have somebody in the next debate just get ready, because I hate when these debates are, excuse the phrase, bastardized. You know what I mean? They don't give the people room to breathe and really talk. And by the way, can everybody stop yelling? I don't know whether it's the sound systems up there. They can't hear themselves. Stop yelling. But man, would I love in the next debate, which I think is next month at the Reagan Library in Simi Valley, California. Well, I would love to have somebody, if Ramaswamy goes off and just starts sucking up the air that should be used by the other candidates for some substantive policy stuff. What I wouldn't give to have one of the candidates say, Vivek, with all due respect, you have no shot. You have no idea what you're talking about. You're auditioning for a cable TV slot, which I think somebody said night to someone. Oh, all right, I feel better. Now, I will, I'm going to ask you folks on Facebook what you thought of this, too. Facebook.com/WICC600. But what do you think? Give me a call. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. This is only step one of the process. But man, oh man, oh my God, I'm watching this last night, and it got off to a good start and this and the other, you know, but the booing and the heckling of Chris Christie and Ramaswamy there, stepping all over and people shouting, which, oh my God. So what did you think? Give me a call. Did anybody come out a clear winner to you last night? And here's a bigger question. Do these things even matter? Honestly. Now, I guess they might have research that shows it might matter. And if I see any post-debate polls, I'll let you know. There was probably a few, pardon me, that came out this morning that I missed. But give me your honest opinion on this. We'll have a good time talking about this. There were eight people up there last night. I guess Doug Berg made it. He may have a fractured leg or something like that, but good on him. So what did you think? Was there somebody that really impressed you? Was there somebody up there that you thought you liked, but you went, ugh? And if you're a, let me ask you something. If you're a, if you consider yourself a reliable Republican voter, why does the party hate Chris Christie so much? I don't get this. The guy helped Donald Trump get elected. Did you know that? He helped with his debate prep, but now he doesn't like what the guy he helped get elected has done. Let us, of course, go to one of our go-to people when we talk things politics, particularly on the national side. We welcome Professor Emeritus Alan Sanders joining us. He's an attorney, Professor Emeritus Poli-Sci at St. Peter's University in Jersey City, New Jersey. Also a former Time Magazine correspondent concentrating on politics and all that is going on. Professor Sanders, Paul again here, sir. How are you? Good to have you back.
Thank you, Paul. Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm good, and I'm trying to figure out, Professor, what we saw last night. What did we see? I think I know what I saw, but you tell me.
Well, I think what we saw was that Donald Trump was a presence there, continues to be a presence, and probably emerged the winner of that debate last night. You know, the people who are pro-Trump are trying to get MAGA support, and they danced around Donald Trump to the extent they could. And then, of course, the two candidates who have made clear that they oppose Donald Trump because of what he did on January 6th, that's former Governor Hutchinson and former Governor Christie, you know, tried to land some punches on Trump. So Trump wasn't there, but Trump was everywhere last night. And I think he emerged the winner because I don't think any of the people on stage that day particularly distinguished themselves or had a breakthrough moment.
What do you make, Professor, of this Vivek Ramaswamy, who, listen, in his personal life, in his business life, he's, by all accounts, been a marvelous success. He's got a lot of money. But people are wondering, you know, who is this guy? Who did we see last night? And is this all just, is it the shiny new object, or does he have any real staying power here, do you think?
Well, I think it's like, you know, ice cream. It's like the flavor of the month. I mean, I think, you know, he stood there and he certainly made himself known by being aggressive, by trying to imitate Donald Trump, by, you know, being rude at times and being boisterous and interrupting and trying to sort of garner all the attention on that stage. But I think really he turned out to be, in my view, the flavor of the month, because once you start to really look at his positions, what his experience is, what his knowledge is of various issues, and I think he'll come under increasing scrutiny because of his performance last night, I think it'll all kind of come crashing down eventually.
Does any of this, Professor, and I know you say Trump is still leading now and he's still the elephant in the room, and I'm starting to lose track, I guess. This is indictment in number four today, coming up at 7:30. But does any of this matter, or will it matter more, perhaps, if even though Trump is there, this field gets whittled down a little and we eventually maybe go from 8 to 6 to 4? Or is this just a fool's exercise, you think?
Well, I think it's hard to tell. certainly the MAGA crowd, the sycophantic MAGA crowd, will not walk away from Donald Trump, no matter what he does, no matter what he says, and no matter what the legal consequences are of the criminal charges against him. So there's a hardcore that believes that he's the knight in shining armor coming down on a white horse, and it's a cult-like following. But the polls do indicate that if you broaden things out among Republicans and certainly among the general electorate, there's quite a lot of discomfort about having a national party candidate for the presidency being someone who is indicted. And I suspect if we ever came down to convictions before the general elections, there would be great discomfort for voting for such a person. So the ground is kind of tender. That is to say, the hardcore supporters, nothing will dissuade them. But if you broaden it out to the more general electorate, I think there are some indications that the support for Trump is a little shaky there.
Let's switch, Professor Sanders, over to the Democratic side for a minute. Again, it's an odd situation. You have an elderly president who continues to, shall we say, show the signs that we will all get to eventually, hopefully, you know, later rather than sooner. You've got RFK Jr. there. You've got Marianne Williamson, who is, you know, not a real force. She's in there, obviously, to sell books and get her name out there. Do the Democrats just stay the course, do you think, at this time? Or, Professor, might they have Plan B and Plan C kind of all set in the folder, in the manila envelope, in case it's a break glass moment?
Well, I think the Democrats are pretty much stuck where they are. You know, if you've got the incumbent president that says he wants to run again, it's very hard to run against him and to start any fundraising or any momentum on behalf of a candidate who would want to challenge him. So I think the Democrats, that ship has sailed. They're pretty much stuck with Joe Biden. And as you point out, I think Joe Biden's biggest problem running in the general election is his age. It's not so much his policies. I mean, his policies can be attacked by anyone. As any incumbent president's policies can be attacked. That's fair game, and that's what you would expect in any campaign. But I think the Democrats are nervous because of his age. And that means, you know, will he be sharp on a debate stage? Will he be sharp as he goes around campaigning? Will there be a medical event at some point, either in the campaign or during his presidency? I think that's what makes people nervous on the Democratic side. But in terms of the policies that Joe Biden has espoused and promoted and gotten passed in the legislature, in the Congress, I think Democrats are fully on board with the Biden agenda and the Biden record. It's the health question and the age questions that are of concern.
Do you think, Professor, we could see a scenario where he just wouldn't debate? I mean, is that possible? Do you think that, and people might know why, but he's like, hey, winner, you know, defeat me if you want to, but I'm not going to debate maybe a Donald Trump or a Republican.
Right. Well, if it's Donald Trump, I think he's got an easy out. That is to say, I won't debate with an alleged defendant, with a criminal defendant.
Yeah.
The presidency doesn't debate with such an individual. And certainly if Donald Trump is convicted in any of the charges before that, he has an easy out. Says, I don't debate with a felon on stage. So he's got an easy out there. If it's another Republican that emerges as the Republican nominee, then it'll be much more difficult to dodge a debate if that's what he wants to do. Much more difficult. At that point, it's a traditional candidate. And people will ask, well, why don't you want to debate with him, you know, or her?
Yeah, you talked about the professor, the Biden policies here. It's interesting, though, that there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect where some of the economic policies are very good. The numbers are very good. They point to these certain policies, but there seems to be a disconnect with people if you poll them on it, primarily because, and we know all the reasons, gasoline is still really high, and they're still paying more for stuff that they're angry about, their restaurant tab, their tab at the supermarket for two or three bags of groceries. You think that might be a little bit of a speed bump for Joe Biden to get over?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, while the numbers look good overall, as you point out, for individual people, I mean, they see their bills. They see their electricity bill, their gas bill. They see their rent bill and their tax bill. And for many of them, even though the salaries of, you know, if you look at the overall number, salaries have gone up. For many people, they haven't gone up enough to account for all the inflationary pressures that, you know, surround their daily purchases. So it's a real problem for Biden. Now, he's decided to make his campaign be based broadly on the economy and the success that he's had in the economy, generally speaking. But, you know, it's a dangerous proposition because many people will not agree with him. So, yes, that is certainly a soft spot, you know, and a problem for the Biden campaign. Absolutely.
All right. Professor Emeritus Alan Sanders, St. Peter's University, Jersey City, New Jersey. He's also an attorney and a former Time Magazine reporter. Professor, great to talk with you as always, and we shall talk to you down the road as this thing gets more and more interesting. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Take care, Paul.
Appreciate it, Professor Alan Sanders. We cannot go any further. On this Thursday, the 24th of August, 2023, without checking in with our main guy, Lenny Grimaldi, the website, of course, onlyinbridgeport.com. Lenny, sir, how are you today? What's up?
Really, Uncle Paul, you've been having me reminisce, you know, from 40 years ago when I filled out timesheets.
So. Yeah. What is that?
That long since I filled out timesheets.
What is that, Lenny? The state, well, we're going to eventually get to a computer database. It's 2023. What are they doing, Lenny?
Don't you love government?
Oh, my God. Well, we couldn't keep track of it, Lenny, because we're using paper timesheets. Oh, my God.
The place that never disappoints,
oh,
right?
My
it's more
God.
Politics and state government.
Oh, my God. So let's talk about this. Hey, now, Lenny, what is this? Four people on the November election ballot? Is that a possibility? Fill us in here.
It is indeed. So this is everybody's plan B. So we know what the primary ballot's going to be on September 12th. It's the battle of the JGs, Joe Ganim and John Gomes.
Mm-hmm.
And they will square off head-to-head, mano-a-mano, on September 12th. But that doesn't end there. So you have other candidates like Lamon Daniels and also State Senator Marilyn Moore who are potentially vying for general election spots as either petitioning candidates or Working Families Party line. And John Gomes has a line on the Bridgeport Independent Party, and Joe Ganim also has a line in the general election. So, yeah, there's going to be this primary, and this usually settles it in Bridgeport. The primary is the big thing, and it's done. But it'll create some intrigue for the general election, whether it's Gomes or it's Ganim that comes out of this primary on September 12th, and basically, you know, we're just like 2.5 weeks out, so it's really crunch time up to get to September 12th.
Could we, Lenny, see another scenario here similar, maybe not for the primary, but maybe for that or the general where you had Marilyn Moore, you know, 4 years ago, Lenny, people remember she won at the polls, but it was the absentees that flipped it. And of course, you have that Bridgeport Generation Now votes with 15,000 applications out there. Anybody worried about that or not?
Well, I mean, so I did check, and it was actually like 19,000 that Gen Now sent out, and that was in anticipation of their candidate Marilyn Moore being on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marilyn, State Senator Moore, has never been the most organized, structured campaigner. This is the second time she flubbed the signature process. She did 4 years ago for the general election, trying to run on the Working Families Party line, and she didn't have enough signatures to get in the primary ballot. But in checking with the town clerk's office this week, you know, the absentee ballots that are coming is usually what I call from the usual suspects. So far, there's no evidence that and there's a lot of usual suspects that are going to be rounded up at some point, you know. But there's no evidence that mass mailing from Gen Now is trickling in for a lot of requests. My sense is a lot of that stuff got thrown out. You know, and they were just used for timesheets, you know, probably,
wow.
I guess.
Jeez.
A lot of paper coming in for timesheets. But here's the caveat to this. This is going to be probably record-breaking for a number of people who vote in a mayoral primary.
Wow.
Why is that? Because the state of Connecticut has made it easier to vote by absentee ballot. So they so nuanced the law last last year, so that because of the spinoff from COVID, all a voter has to fear is a concern of getting sick.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, the concern of getting sick is enough for somebody, like, who doesn't want, you know, his fears, touch points, or going out of their home or to walk and vote. They only have to fear illness to vote by absentee ballot. So it's perfectly legitimate. And all the usual suspects are knocking on doors for both camps saying, hey, listen, you can vote by AB. You can vote that way. It's simply because you fear getting ill. And so there's already been more than 2,000 absentee ballot requests, and there's going to be a lot more. So I think by the time we're done, it could be like closer to 4,000 requests for absentee ballots. You could actually see, you know, a good quarter to a third of the people voting in that September 12th primary voting by AB.
Yeah, because we and I tell this to people all the time, Lenny Grimaldi is the guest, we don't have mail-in voting per se in this state, but like you said, the no excuse, virtually no excuse absentee now basically means we do, right? I mean, if you want, you just have to, like you said, hey, I'm concerned about getting sick, right? That's mail-in voting.
Correct. So that's correct. So forever, the only early voting we had was by absentee ballot with like six or seven specific reasons you had to cite, or one of those reasons. To vote by absentee ballot. This is going to be the last cycle that's going to be in place, because they're going to start next year with early voting. I forget for primaries, I think it's 10 days.
Okay.
And for general elections, I believe it's 2 weeks that you actually have, quote unquote, early voting, that you could start early in the process. So that's going to have to sort its way out. You know, who's going to fund it? What's the process?
Yeah.
Could it be the how many more bodies do you need? You know, just because you passed that law, it's like there's always like, you know, watch out for the small print, and logistically how that's going to work, I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, and Stephanie Thomas, the Secretary of the State, Lenny, she's been very vocal, right, saying, I don't have enough money to do this. I mean, I think she said she wanted like 18 or 20 million to do it right. And I thought I read where the General Assembly said, well, we'll start with 8 million and see what happens. I mean, that's confidence building, right? That's exactly what people want.
Well, you're gonna get a lot of meowing from municipal registrar's office and the town clerk's office. I can tell you that, because the burden goes on them.
Yeah.
So the municipality is going to have that burden, and they're going to say, "How are we going to finance this?" And they're going to do the math and say, "We're going to need, depending on your community, definitely tens of thousands or more, and some communities hundreds of thousands or more, to finance this process and staff it and to oversee it." So I think that's going to happen next year, 2024, and it's going to be a big cycle. It's a presidential cycle. So
yeah.
That's, you know, large. That's your largest turnout.
Yeah.
And it's a presidential cycle.
And before we talk about a former president who you, I guess, know somewhat, let's talk about this. You have a story here about an East End City Council candidate who has withdrawn his run. Why did he step away, Lenny?
Oh, because he lived in another district and tried to persuade people that he was actually living in another. So basically you had a guy running on the John Gomes line, Harry Carrillo, who actually lives in the 138th district of the Upper Seaside, which is an adjoining district to the East End 139th district.
Mm-hmm.
And he filed a false application to elections officials that he lived in the 139th when he didn't. Actually, when the heat was turned up and there was a story that I wrote about in complaints, he actually found a different address. And so he had two false addresses. he was kind of ping-ponging around, you know.
Oh,
the city trying to find an address when no one said, hey, it's false. And so that was a classic Only in Bridgeport moment.
Oh, my God.
I said, well, dude, you don't live here, you know. The sad part about it, and here's the sad part about it.
Yeah.
So he has this person that he knew. Her name was Sylvia Ramos.
Okay.
Who lives on the East, right? And he just used her address, but she's on Section 8. So you just can't have people flopping in your house when you're on Section 8. And it became, you know, she was terrified. I don't blame her.
No, you blame her?
She felt that it was going to jeopardize her housing status.
Oh.
So she filed a complaint against him and said, look, and she said, he doesn't live here. He made it up. So eventually, you know, the other day, he said, all right, let
that's
me drop it. He dropped out. So he's not running.
Jeez, that's great. All right, a few minutes we have left here. Your former boss, every time we talk, Lenny, it's a new chapter of the legal trials and tribulations of DJT. What's going on in his mind now?
I like to call it our weekly Trump dump.
Yeah,
you know?
What's going on?
He's only a couple hours away from turning himself in in the Georgia case.
Jeez.
About him trying to, quote-unquote, scam the election and overturn the 2020 election. So this is going to be a little bit different because he's going to get booked like most people do. You know, he's been fingerprinted in the past, but there's going to be mug shots.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying they're going to treat him like everybody else. And, you know, we'll see how much – you know, political he makes off of it. But I think here's what I find fascinating about this case as opposed to others.
Yeah.
The prosecutor in this case, Sanny Willis, wants to expedite this trial.
Yeah.
And so because, you know, when we initially talked about it, I said there's going to be 18, you know, defendants or who knows, 18 or something. And you have a lot of defendants, kind of slows it down with so many lawyers.
Yeah.
But she's like saying, hey, we're suited up and ready to go.
October, she said.
Yeah, we want to shoot. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense because she's been probing this case for like over 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Over 2 years or more. Yeah, 2.5 years or so. So she may feel that she's got her ducks lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think some of these people are going to eventually fold.
Oh, yeah.
Because the legal bills are enormous. I mean, even you know, I heard the other day that Trump did cave, and he decided to do a big fundraiser for Rudy Giuliani. Because Rudy's been begging on for money. So this stuff gets really, really pricey.
Oh, my God.
My former boss is going to throw him $100,000 ahead. And I am not going to that.
I'm
not going to that. I got back in the day, Uncle Paulie, I got the calls.
Nice.
Hey, we're throwing a party. Write a check for $2,000, but I'm not going to this.
Nah, that's a little above you. All right, Lenny, thanks. Yeah. Be good, buddy. We'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, okay. Be good. There's Lenny Grimaldi, only in Bridgeport.com.